The Department of Journalism at the University of Illinois, and today we're going to be talking about the coverage that's taking place since the events of this past Tuesday. When horrific events such as the attack on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon occur, the news media are put to the ultimate test. Years of experience and training come into play. The media is judged not only by how it responds to the tragedy itself, but how it responds to the understandably erratic flow of information. It is a public wanting and needing to know what happened that judges the media's performance. But the public is not the only arbiter of media performance. The media themselves are often their own harshest critics. So unless you've ever worked in a professional newsroom, you will not know what happens when a huge story like the one Tuesday breaks. Adrenaline is pumping at hyper speed, while reliable information is often arriving at the speed of cold molasses. Frustration, confusion, and in the case of Tuesday's terrible attack, fear can result in inaccurate and incomplete reporting. Journalism is not an exact science. It is, however, an empirical discipline, in that it uses certain empirical tools to find the truth. And for the scientists, we know that empiricism means arriving at the truth via observation and experimentation. But for the journalists, the empirical tools are observation and interviewing. And we've seen plenty of that in the last couple of days. But it may be what we have not seen that is most impressive about how the media have covered this story, risking their lives to get the incredible video and audio feeds that we've come to take for granted this week, and pushing themselves to the point of collapse in order to stay with the story. Many journalists, like the rescue workers we've come to admire, have worked the story 48 hours and even longer straight. Showing compassion for the victims and the families of victims, while internalizing their own emotions and subordinating the inevitable stress that comes with the job. There has been some criticism of the media, nevertheless. Some networks were condemned for showing falling bodies from the World Trade Center towers. Others have been criticized even for being so obsessed with the scandals and the Gary Condit story that they failed to report on early warnings about possible terrorist attacks at home. But today what we want to do is spend some time talking to some people who do this for a living and who are out there right now working this story. We have a lineup of people, including Dana Milbank, who's author of Smash Mouth, 2 Years in the Gutter with Al Gore and George W. Bush. She's a White House correspondent for The Washington Post. She'll be joining us by phone from Washington. Also, Janie Gabbett, managing editor of Reuters North America, by phone from Chicago. And Lynn Sweet, Washington correspondent for the Chicago Sun-Times, also from Washington. We also have Ken Schreiner, news director at WCIA-TV, by phone from Champaign. Phil Donahue, station manager at WICD-TV. Jay Pierce, WIL AM program director. And Tom Rogers, WIL news director. So our first person we'll be talking to is Lynn Sweet, and she's on the phone right now. Lynn? Good morning.
Hello.
Yeah, Lynn, how are you?
I'm here. It's a rainy day now in Washington, which isn't helping the efforts of the search and recovery teams over at the Pentagon. I understand that it's also raining in New York too, which isn't helping much.
Lynn, how have you been covering the story? What have you been doing to from the Washington perspective, at least, on this story?
Well, let me tell you what I will be doing today. It's to go out to the Pentagon to try and find people who are still searching for their loved ones, and to talk more with some of the soldiers who are being pressed into these recovery and the rescue efforts. They pressed into service a ceremonial unit called the Old Guard, which many tourists might know, even though they didn't know that was the name of it, know from their service at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier and other places where there's ceremonial duties. But these young soldiers, a lot of 18- and 19-year-olds, are also helping with the effort at the Pentagon, and some of them talked a little bit about their duties this morning, and so I want to try and get out there and try and talk to more people, and also find if anyone from Chicago is involved in any of the rescue efforts.
We just have received a bulletin from the Associated Press that the Senate has given its official consent for the president to use force against those responsible for Tuesday's terrorist attacks.
Right. Now, what that is about is and it's interesting that it's to use force against those who had this terrorist attack. It's not an all-out declaration of war. There is a distinction, and it's not giving the president carte blanche powers to do anything to anyone, anytime. It's specifically for the acts of this week.
Is it the consensus there among journalists that that we're going to be seeing some kind of an official declaration of war? Or is that...
No, I don't think so, because it is very rare. It's only happened 5 times in our nation's history. I think there was some concern about giving the president a total blank check as far as the spending, this $40 billion of spending that he wanted, including $20 billion just to deal with New York and Washington. There was some concern about that, but that is just, Ron, going to get buried, because no one wants to be the one person who's that, you know, 99 to 1 vote or 400 and something in one vote, even if there are concerns about writing a blank check. There is a tremendous amount of unity and bipartisanship going on right now, and this is just the type of extraordinary situation where if you err on the side of spending too much in a way that you might not have wanted it exactly to go, you're not going to complain about it. I think the whole political momentum is you err on the side of doing too much in terms of the money. Now, if there's a problem in giving the president too much power, today's not the day to argue about it.
When you began covering this story, I'm assuming it was Tuesday, how did your day begin?
I'll tell you what I did on Tuesday. I was at Midway Airport, so that's where I'm really just beginning the on-the-scene work today. I was at Midway. I went and worked out of the office that day. I had to drive back from Chicago to Washington in order to get here, since there was just no other way. A chunk of my time was spent just driving back here. I did a column that ran in yesterday's paper about how yesterday and how the difference between one day makes and all our lives, and how things will be different, and how things that were important to us on Monday are not important to us on Wednesday. That's what I did, a column on one day on the first day. I did, in a sense, a roundup focusing on the president and his flights throughout the United States that day, trying to figure out what to do for the country and trying to ensure his personal safety.
Lynn, let me give our listeners a couple of numbers they can use to call in if they want to talk to you and talk to us about the coverage. Mm-hmm. Our numbers are here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, 333-9455. And if you're calling from outside the area, it's 1-800-222-9455, 1-800-222-9455. Lynn, when you were... doing this, when you began working the story, what have you found the most difficult thing there that you've had to deal with in working this story? What is it? Access to information? Is it just a lot of incomplete information, or have the people been fairly forthcoming?
In a way, it's the frustration of being a print reporter on what, in some ways, in the first day is a TV story, because what could I say or write more than what you could see on the TV when you saw the plane going into the building or when you see the initial horror of what happened. When you have a situation with breaking news like that, TV could just get out so much more information so much faster than a reporter, print reporter can, that it's frustrating. It's this way on a lot of big breaking events, but the magnitude of this one is so great that you realize that there are limits to each medium. And on the first day of a breaking story, TV has an overprint. On the other hand, I noticed in the difference between watching national TV and reading the national papers, how much then the national papers, the stories that were enterprise stories in the New York Times on Wednesday were Thursday's TV, or on Tuesday or Wednesday were the TV stories that some of the national outlets used the next day. So then they were following the print lead. And you go back and forth. I think what you have to do as a print reporter and try and get more inside the story so you can tell people things that are different from what they're seeing on TV.
Have you been able to do that yet?
Today is the day, really, because, I lost a chunk of time because I had to drive here. So I'm going to try in the coming days and try and find something a little different. Maybe not. There's just so much to tell. There's so many stories to tell and so much information to get out and so much ground to cover you know, there's just a lot there, and there's a lot. A story like this, too, has a lot more coordination with a paper-wide coordination. Sometimes on a story, it might just be me going out and doing my thing. I might have a tip or an idea or an angle or a document that makes the story. In this case, we're all there's so many reporters that are working on the same story that there's a lot more to knit together. And this is true not only at the Chicago Sun-Times, but at every paper, because there's just a lot of stories and aspects of this story to coordinate. It takes place in two cities. You have the other thing I want to help monitor is the national aviation safety situation, airport opening. So we have, just think of all the things that you have, just the horrible story of the victim trying to help their families and write about that, trying to figure out what's going to happen with the airports, specifically, of course, for our area. We care a lot about Midway and O'Hare, but they fit into a national network. What are the new security precautions? How are they working out? So there's a lot. Any point during the day, I could trip over any of these aspects, and maybe I'll do a separate story. Maybe I feed into someone else's story. So each day unfolds in ways I might not necessarily know at the end of the day how the day started. How the day starts and ends around might be two different things.
Right. Well, I think what you're saying it underscores the delineation between what print media do and what broadcast media do. And I think it's, you know, as you say, there's no way you can possibly put into words what people have already seen, at least in any way that would be, would have any, would actually change the way they what they've seen or actually embellish it at all. It doesn't need to be embellished.
Right. What newspapers are good for are giving more of the details.
Right.
What happened, how the girders melted. We had a terrific story in the Sun-Times the day after the bombing, on how we had an interview with an engineer who talked about how metal melted under this situation. And it was a situation that no building is ever designed for, because who would have thought that you would turn a plane loaded with fuel and ram it into a building. And I liked that story because I understood more about the dynamics of how these buildings could collapse so quickly,
mm-hmm.
these supposedly impenetrable buildings. And knowing the science behind it, that's the kind of story a newspaper could do so well.
So what will you be doing today? What will you do
I've
now?
I've already made a bunch of phone calls looking for dealing with search and rescue. I'm going to go out to the Pentagon.
Mm-hmm.
And if I have a chance, I want to go out to the airport to see what kind of extra security measures they have going on, and maybe there's a compare and contrast to O'Hare, you know, work with somebody on that aspect of it. I'm also want to get more of a sense if the if the city's turning into the downtown area has more of an armed camp feel to it, or just a sense of, the sense of security. There are some metro stations where you can't use all the exits and entrances that you could previously. So I want to have a sense of this is just for, and how this might be impacting life here, or how this might all knit into just one story I do. Some of this I haven't figured out yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, part of this on a day like this, I just have to go. See what there is to see. I have, like I say, I have some ideas in dealing with the Pentagon and the state of life here.
Well, you're a one-person bureau, right?
Yes.
So you've got a huge beat to cover, and it's not going to be easy for one person.
Well, right. It's not like I could send, if I had another person, I would have stationed them at the Pentagon and then have another person roam around and another person at the cathedral where there's the memorial service going on. But I do the best I can. The good thing is I don't have to call anyone to coordinate them. If I want to change what I'm doing, I just change what I'm doing. I don't have to have any meetings. I just go move around and do it. But there is a lot going on in the city today that could all be part of different stories or one story. I probably don't make those. I make those decisions in coordination with the Home Office in Chicago. And sometimes I wonder if people think that we start a day and we know what we're going to do. And the answer is sometimes we don't. Obviously, on Tuesday, no one knew what was going to happen. And I might not make a final decision on what happens, how I write and what I write until much later in the day.
If you were grading the media and how they've covered the story, what kind of grade would you give them from A to an F?
You have to give up until yesterday when some rumors got out of control, I would have thought everyone did a terrific job. But you had stories approved unfounded dealing with the rescue of some of the firefighters. The situation with the men arrested at the New York airport last night turned out not to be exactly the case. So New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani this morning pleaded for a little more caution in reporting things because, you know, if you're wrong, you're wrong. The ability of TV, the great ability of TV is that they could correct something within a few minutes. They might report something and say, no, that turned out not to be the case, and they move on. Once you put it into a newspaper, you have it for all time. So you have to be very, very careful. And right now there's such an eagerness to get all the news out that mistakes were made, and particularly in the rescue of these firefighters and exactly who these men were who were, you know, taken in at LaGuardia last night. So I think you have to be careful, but you always have to be careful. But in the grade, I would have to knock down, a grade for the mistakes yesterday.
Let me remind our listeners how they can call in and talk to you and us here in the studio. If you're here in Champaign-Urbana, the number to call is 333-9455, 333-9455. And if you're calling from outside the area, it's 1-800-222-9455, 1-800-222-9455.
I want to tell you one of the most chilling things I saw on the drive back from Chicago to Washington were signs in Pennsylvania. These are these signs that motorists see all the time, giving them advance notice of congestion ahead or some other traffic warning. It was a sign up that said to motorists, avoid New York City, and then there are instructions if you're going to New England and other routes to take. That was just so chilling to see a blinking sign saying, avoid New York City.
Hmm. We have a caller on line 4. Lynn, just one second. Hello?
Good morning.
Yes, good morning. You're on with Lynn Sweet and Ron Yates here in the studio.
What are the source of monies? What are the sources of monies of those Arab countries in the Near East, Far East, whatever? Pakistan, Afghanistan. I understand Afghanistan is very poor, but those countries. What is their other sources of monies besides oil?
Are you talking about Pakistan and Afghanistan?
Well, any of those countries that might be involved in this.
Well, there's so many. The answer is I don't know what, because I don't know what countries are involved.
Well, say it's Pakistan, and say it's, well, any of those countries.
Oil is a big part of the economy of many of the countries in the Middle East. But
yeah, the Middle East.
The money, but don't.
Is there any other source of monies?
Well, I'm sure there. I'm not an expert on it. I'd not have to look it up as you would, or do some reporting on it. And I deal so much with domestic matters that I don't know.
Well, if
and
you're
the other thing is that this is a case that it might not. Be the money. If what you're really trying to get at, ma'am, is who paid for all this training and.
No, I know who paid for that. I think I know, or I heard. You know, I've been listening to it all. No, what did the other man want to say something?
No, I was just going to say if you were talking about the money that if one of the suspects uses, it's Osama bin Laden. It's his own money and it's his father's money.
Mm-hmm. But, yes, I understand he inherited a huge amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
The thought I had was, I living here, and I'm a product of World War II, and I know the one thing we did was conserve gasoline, and I wondered if something like that shouldn't be for the citizens, the common citizen, to be able to do, to feel like they're doing something to help the cause.
Yeah. I think that's a consideration, and obviously we'll have to see what happens over the next several weeks when this becomes a little more apparent. But I thank you for your call, and let me take another caller here on line 1. Hello, you're on WLL.
Hi. I just have one comment, and that is that I was very disturbed by the coverage of the major television networks, and particularly their talking heads, their anchor people, and the way they continue to build up emotion and almost, well, not almost, but fan jingoism. And it's almost a propaganda affair, as far as I can see. There was one point where they had a psychologist on saying that one of the problems was going to be post-traumatic stress syndrome, and that one of the manifestations of that syndrome is that they people that have lived through it continue to see the event over and over again. Well, then I counted how many times they showed the airplane blasting into the tower in the next 15 minutes, and it was 7. And I just think that the sensationalistic and flag-waving coverage is horrible and a disservice.
Well, you see, the reason they probably showed that so many times in that 15-minute period is because you saw it, but maybe somebody just tuning in hadn't seen it, and so you're trying to...
This is the third day, you
right.
know?
Well, I know.
I mean, it's...
It's a riveting, horrendous sight. And
yeah, so they take advantage of it. It's like when Joe Theismann broke his leg. The sports showed that over and over again. You had to not watch sports for 4 days if you didn't want to see it.
Well, that might be what you do. See, for a lot of people, it's easier to not watch something if you think it's too much, and to deny information or even letting people see things more than once. There's a lot to absorb in this.
But I think
so much to absorb I would rather go the route of seeing too much too many times, and if God forbid I were one of the victims, a member of the family of one of the victims, and I didn't want to see it, then to me there's such an easy solution here. You don't watch the TV if this.
Oh yeah, no, I'm not. I'm not saying that it affected me. I just was curious to see what they would do, but I kind of knew what they would do, and then the effect of accusing over and over again Arabs and saying even before there was any information, oh, it's Arabs. And
well, no one
my daughter has
people
two
were
Arab
careful.
Friends, and
I
one...
Bet, sir, if you... Don't. I bet if we had a transcription, you would
and
not
I
just see anyone use the word Arab.
Fault.
Pardon?
I think the media is stirring up emotions in a terrible way.
I think they've been pretty restrained in that area,
yeah,
frankly.
Oh, my God. I think you're way off the mark. So
no, but Lynn, first of all, let me ask you, do you need to leave to go?
I would have to leave in about a minute or two.
Okay, fine.
I want to make a plea to this man.
All right.
We can only report on things that happen. We didn't, what happened is what's horrible, not the media coverage of it. And in a horrific event, this is what this is. It's such an event of unprecedented proportions, it almost goes beyond any what any report, TV or print, can say. I think, sir, in a way, that's what you're reacting to. It's not how the report is covered. It's the catastrophic nature of this horrible event.
And another thing, it's also when you have people who are officials saying these things, you're reporting what they're saying. You're not yourself saying,
right.
Yeah, it's people from the Middle East. I mean, they're pointing the finger pretty much at Osama bin Laden. They have been since the very first day. So that's another area. I have one more caller here on line two. Hello, you're on with Lynn Sweet and WLL.
Hi, I have a couple questions, but I have to disagree with what Lynn just said, where she said the media just reports what happened, because at the outset you talked about the empirical nature of journalism and the necessity for observation. And I watched CNN, as they did in the election, run basically false information along the bottom of their ticket as they called states for Bush or Gore, whatever. They had no idea. And yesterday or 2 days ago, they were saying, a car bomb blew up in front of the State Department. Somebody blew themselves up on 15th Street. Now, in an effort to sort of keep hysteria to a minimum, if that's possible, doesn't it behoove the media to make absolutely sure?
Well, I think
of
in a case
facts?
Of public, sir, in a case of public safety, I would rather know that their mistakes are being made. In the reporting, there were some I just recounted, and I heard the State Department report, too. I would think in this case, when there's a public safety issue, if somebody thinks that there is a bomb going off someplace, and it should be right, and there's no excuse, and we can't, you know, we can't make mistakes. But you know what? Mistakes happen when you have a big story like this.
And, but they ran that story.
If there's a public safety issue, if somebody thinks there's a bomb going off, and people should know it, so not to go down there or not to get involved in it, I think that, you know, I can't imagine how people wouldn't want to know something. Now, should it always be right? Of course.
I'm not saying people don't want to know, and I'm not saying that you should not do that in the interest of public safety, but CNN ran that report probably for a good 45 minutes on the ticker, and I didn't see anything. This port's not verified. They just ran the ticker on the bottom.
Let me jump in here and try to explain. I've been a news reporter, and just by way of identification, I'm Jay Pierce, the program director at WILL, sitting in too. And I just think from a journalist standpoint, and again, for 25 years I've been doing this, and I think part of the problem is this. First of all, on election night, that information was coming from Voter News Service, which is a consortium of the different networks and news and media organizations. And when you subscribe to that or the Associated Press, you subscribe and you trust in good faith that the information you'll be getting is accurate, and you report that it comes from Voter News Service or the Associated Press, and you have to take them in good faith. We cannot go everywhere and check out every fact for ourselves on our staff, and that is why we trust the Associated Press, CNN the same way. If they receive information from credible, reputable sources, a police agency, the FBI, or someone else, that there is a bomb threat or there is a bomb in a car, and you report that that agency is saying that this is happening, we can't go out into the streets all over town. We don't have, 500 reporters to be able to be out everywhere that the police are and where something's happening. And I think what Lynn was saying, that in the interest of public safety, erring sometimes on the side of that, it happens. We try to check everything out and corroborate from a number of different sources to try to triangulate and get the story as accurate as possible. And sometimes...
And I think a sophisticated viewer should know that when there's breaking news like this, that as much as I'd like to say that everyone in my profession gets it right 100%, we're not going to get everything right.
Right. No.
And I think if there's a question of the responsibility, especially in a public safety issue, you err on the side of giving out information that might be helpful to people.
And I think it's easy to sit back and see all of this, I sympathize. It's terrible when you're watching something and it turns out to be wrong, and you feel like you've been cheated or somebody hasn't done the best job in getting you the information because you were believing something, then you find out it wasn't true.
And give an example of where getting the information really might have helped save lives. Remember, those people in that plane, the plane that crashed in Pennsylvania, had, because of the marvel of technology and cell phones, they knew that these other planes had rammed into the World Trade Center, and they were able, so we think from the reports we have, and when I say we, it's not me, I didn't do any of the reporting on this, but they were able to try to do something about it, because they got the news.
If that's what happened. But you see,
I know there's an F, and I know that there's just reports based on the cell phone, but... there would have been.
Well, my point.
I don't know. I just am so for getting out information when there's any kind of public safety issue. I can't see the argument against it. And I think readers and listeners have to just have a little patience too, in these breaking news events, to know that they're going to get it. I like the idea in some ways that we're not the gatekeeper in everything. Now, in a report, when people might have been arrested, who, as these guys were last night, and that's just, and if that doesn't prove to be the case, that's a little more serious because the immediate public safety issue might not be the same. But all these questions also are not equal. If the listener is still on the phone, what happened election night isn't quite equal to what's happened this week.
Exactly. Yeah. We're talking about apples and oranges here. Well, Lynn, I, if you have to take off, I certainly understand, and we're really happy you're able to join us this morning.
Thank you so much.
And we'll be talking with you down the road a ways, huh?
I hope so. Thank you.
Okay, Lynn, good luck.
Goodbye.
Okay. Well, it's good to hear from Lynn. If you hit drop over there on that, on the bottom one there, I think it would work. There. Okay.
Okay. Also in the studio today, you just heard Jay Pierce, who's WILL AM program director. We're obviously kind of we're all sharing here on the microphone. So, Jay, if you said you've been doing this for 25 years. Sometimes when you have a story of this magnitude, many of us, many journalists who are working the story in New York and Washington have never worked a story that comes anywhere near this magnitude. I mean, I thought I had in my career as a foreign correspondent covering war and Vietnam and places like that, but I don't think I've ever seen anything quite like this. Mm-hmm. So this is just suddenly we're on a different page.
Yeah.
And you yourself, you know, you're talking about trying to get information that's correct, trying to get information out there that's accurate, but there are all these there are impediments in a story
right.
like this.
Right, and I think part of the thing too is when you report one thing, somebody else is going to have heard something else, and they're going to be upset with you because you're not reporting what they heard. And then you get accused of hiding something and not reporting the full truth. For instance, the plane that that went down in Pennsylvania. We have seen a lot of information crop up in the wire services and on the networks, and we've heard about the fact that it may have gone down because some of the passengers on the plane maybe interfered with the hijacking in some way. Now, there are other reports from other agencies that are trying to substantiate, and they claim they have witnesses, too, that something else happened. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to say what that is because I don't really want to be in the business of passing along anything that's not substantiated. This may come out, and it may have been the thing. But there is a whole other scenario involved here, and it has to do with the fact that the plane was maybe circling back to go and hit either Camp David or possibly the White House. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I'll leave it. But I've had some people call who were very upset that we're hiding that. And so you see, there are so many different sides. We try to substantiate as much as we can and where we think information is important. Now, it did last night, and from what was coming over the wires and other sources this morning, appear that some of these people involved in the airport thing in New York fit the profile of the hijackers. There was information that they had some open tickets that were purchased for flights Tuesday. Mm-hmm. There was initial information that some of them were armed. Now, that information was coming from somewhere. A reporter was not making that up,
right.
Unless I'm sadly mistaken. I don't think a reporter would make that up. They were getting it from somewhere.
Exactly.
And they were quoting officials speaking on the condition of anonymity. So they were getting it from some official source.
Or somebody who they felt was a credible source.
Yeah.
We will know what happened with these planes, and especially the ones, say, in Pennsylvania, when they get the flight recorder and able to decipher
exactly
what's on that tape.
And I would caution, too, that the only report that's come out this morning, the only comments that have come out that have said anything other than, well, the fact that they were cleared, but the only person who has been out saying that no, these people were not connected is Senator Joe Biden.
Hmm.
Now, do you believe Senator Joe Biden? Do you believe
right.
the law enforcement officials? Do we take the Senate? And we did have a call this morning that said, don't you guys watch television? Joe Biden was just on the Today Show saying this is all not true.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, no, I don't sit there and watch the Today Show and hear Senator Joe Biden and then go back against all of the information that Reuters and the Associated Press and other sources had been reporting all night. Why should I take Joe Biden's word for it over them until it's all checked out?
Mm-hmm.
And then we find out what Joe Biden's sources were, and apparently he'd been in a briefing or some of his people had been in a briefing with the FBI and the CIA. So then we check it out. But you know, the point of it being there's so much information coming so fast, and there is the people are tired. There's a little bit of hysteria going on from the magnitude of all of this and the newness to a lot of people that, yeah, you just, you know, you got to sometimes when these things are breaking so fast, do the best job you can. But sometimes something is going to happen, I think.
Well, it's the old story of and we are the messenger, obviously,
yeah.
And the messenger often gets
yeah.
blamed and killed sometimes.
Yeah,
so, but it's just a fact of life. Trouble is with a story like this where you have information coming in bits and pieces and shards and just from every direction, and you're trying to piece it together under tremendous pressure of deadline, you know, I really feel, and I've looked at this very critically since it happened, that for the most part, journalists have acquitted themselves quite well with this story. I mean, that's my opinion. But there have been some mistakes, there have been some errors, but I think they've shown a broad range of humanity and compassion in dealing with the victims and the families of victims. They've spent a lot of time trying to help these people. You know, some people don't understand that when you deal with people in a tragic situation, for those people who are victims or who are the families of victims or relatives, for them to be talking to a reporter is a cathartic kind of an experience. It helps them get this out of their system. It helps them deal with it in a way that becomes less painful. And that's another role that journalists play. It's a passive role. It's not a role that they're told to play, but it's a role that they do play because they're involved in this kind of a story. We have with us now Dana Milbank, the author of Smash Mouth, 2 years in the Gutter with Al Gore and George W. Bush. She's the White House correspondent for The Washington Post. She's joining us by phone from Washington. Dana, welcome to the show.
Good to be with you.
What is your take on the way the media have covered the story so far since Tuesday?
Well, it's comprehensive doesn't even begin to say what's happening here. There's just a blizzard of information, and the story is just developing, I think, far more quickly than everybody expected. I'm in a newspaper, so I have a slightly different position on, so we don't have to nibble at every little rumor that's flying around, but the watching the networks and cable news, you have just this breathtaking array of information coming out.
How are you covering it? What are you exactly doing today, and what have you been doing the last couple of days?
Well, obviously, pretty much everybody at my newspaper is working on this story, so I'm dealing with the narrow issue of what the president's doing each day, which is important, but only one piece of the story, and trying to get what information we can out of the White House. Now, with the problem here is that the White House is not inclined to give out really any information at all. That's part of the problem here is you get this, there is this whole proliferation of rumor and various unconfirmed reports, and I think people have just become conditioned to expecting that the White House and most government agencies are not going to provide any confirmation one way or the other. So without anybody to knock down a lot of these things, they're just going to be thrown out there on the television.
We have a couple of callers. Let me go to one of them. Hello, you're from on line two. You're on with Dana Milbank of the Washington Post.
Yes, I just wanted to interject in the midst of all this complaining that I wanted to say thank you for the program that Scott Simon did overnight the other night. I thought it was the most sensitive and sensible and solid coverage that I have heard about it, and it's very, very difficult to remain that way, particularly on an overnight assignment. And whereas I appreciate BBC and I'm used to BBC overnight, this was just what was called for, and I appreciate it.
How do you think the coverage has been so far by the media working the story during the day and since Tuesday?
I think everybody is doing the best he can under the circumstances and giving his darndest, and I just appreciate the fact that we're all kind of tangled in it, and there isn't any other way to be than tangled in it because it means so much. And well, I think you're doing fine.
Well, thank you very much. Let's go to another caller. Hello, you're on with Dana Milbank of the Washington Post.
Yeah, I'm not sure this is directly addressed. I would consider this a tension. I can't really resolve this myself, but I figured I'd throw it out. At one hand, I have to say, by and large, the coverage has been pretty good. I haven't watched it totally, so I guess I'm taking someone's advice, and that's to say just turn it off when you've already seen as much as you can. I think reporters, I suspect, have gotten more sensitive over the years after things like the Flight 800, where the passengers' families were aggressively approached. Yes, for some people, talking about their loss is a good thing. It's a cathartic experience. For a lot of other people, that's just absolutely a horrible thing to have to do. And there was a number of examples in the mid 90s of very aggressive reporters, particularly sort of the TV types, at least that's what I've seen. Okay, I know that's my impression. I could be wrong, but anyway, it seems they've backed off a fair amount. And, you know, they also kept saying, even though evidence sort of emerged fairly quickly, well, let's not jump to the conclusions like we did with Oklahoma City. So by and large, I have to say the coverage has been pretty good. My question would be, I really wonder if, say, Admiral Nimitz would have won the Battle of Midway with people constantly looking over his shoulder all the time. and so to some extent, I really wonder how much harder it is to actually make effective policy in an environment where your every move is going to be dissected to the smallest degree when you do anything.
Well, let me pass that question on to Dana, because he's in a position of actually doing some of that dissecting. I suspect he does it day by day.
Yeah, I think that is an important and interesting point. You saw Defense Secretary Rumsfeld speaking a couple of days ago in his press conference, just taking a time out of that to talk about the danger of government officials releasing classified information. Now, it apparently he was talking about Orrin Hatch, the senator who had spoken about on CNN about the government intercepting communications from Osama bin Laden, and obviously that's just the sort of thing that can harm intelligence.
Osama would like to know that.
Sorry?
Osama would like to know that.
Right. That's something that's an obviously harmful thing. You know, it's I think it is an excellent point that people didn't have to fight the Second World War with MSNBC and CNN on their case. And I, as Rumsfeld pointed out, since the Cold War, people have eased up a bit and relaxed and don't necessarily feel that there's as much of a security threat. And I think there's going to be quite a bit more of a clampdown now, and that will probably clash with the constant 24-hour cable news.
Right. Well, the reason why I say I think this is a tension is because I really do see the media, particularly certain sectors of it, really holding our public officials accountable, and you know, so that I consider it a tension. I mean, you know, at some level, you know, we kind of feel, well, you know, it's a democratic society, we should know what the heck these guys are doing, but at another level, you know, we also say, well, you know, we put them in a position of leadership for some reason, presumably, you know, how well would you do if someone was constantly looking over your shoulder going, why didn't you do that? You know, you can't actually be effective like that. But I'm going to hang up and listen.
All right. Thank you very much. We have another caller here. You're on WIL line 4.
Yeah, well, this idea that there was ever a glory day of aggressive journalism in the U.S., I think, is a real myth. We've had the spectacle recently under the eulogy of Katharine Graham, where they actually got a major fact wrong, which was that the Pentagon Papers release was attributed to Katharine Graham, when actually the New York Times did that. This was, I think, a fitting tribute, actually, to American journalism. But the exchange earlier about Biden, I thought, was based on FBI reports of this bockled imbroglio with Kennedy being close because of these people that were detained last night, one supposedly arrested, and all these details. And now the FBI is totally clammed up about it. And it isn't true that it just came from Biden. There was a report even on NPR, I guess. Jay missed that while he was doing some other work, but they announced that they had, resolved it to their satisfaction, and they would have a news conference on it later, which has probably happened about an hour ago, so who knows what story they spun. I'm skeptical. I'm very skeptical. I'm skeptical of the whole lack of reasonable background reporting on the Middle East, actually, but I guess you would probably say that's another issue. As far as the report about this car bombing, which was the other thing that came up in the first segment, in front of the State Department. That was repeated on CBS radio for hours, not 45 minutes, along the bottom of the screen, as the person said. And I never heard anybody in doing any kind of recap ever say that that was erroneous. In fact, I didn't actually hear about that until now. So I share the first two callers' overwhelming skepticism about what's really going on. I think there are some really heroic and stressful things done on the ground in the way of reporting from the actual scene, but that's you know, that's where these people live. They're going to have to rise to that occasion. And again, I don't want to make light of any of that, but that's my contribution right now. And again, I think we could have a series of programs on why the background and why people are so, you know, ununderstanding of the grievances. And again, I'm not saying any, there's no apologies possibly made for the tactics, but legitimate grievances are being swept away, and we're about to attack someone, anyone, just for, you know, to look right or to look strong. And it's ghastly, and I'm going to have to go. And,
all right. Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much for your call. Dana, just from your perspective, how is President Bush doing, do you think, in this crisis?
Well, I think people had some worries on the first day of him handling the crisis. He just seemed to be sort of hopping around the country in a nervous kind of way, and not appearing to be very reassuring. I think everybody seems to feel he's pivoted pretty nicely from there and is appearing much stronger right now, and I think in contrast to what the caller there was saying, you see, we haven't had the sort of immediate knee-jerk bombing campaign, and they are actually working very carefully to build international support and to figure out exactly what the facts are here before they lash out. They're not talking about an immediate strike. They're talking about a long sustained war, really. So the reviews over the last couple of days have been very good.
All right. Dana, well, listen, I thank you very much for joining. I suspect you probably have to go and work the story yourself. So,
unfortunately, yes.
I thank you very much for joining
us.
And we'll be talking with you in the future, I hope.
Okay, thank you.
Take care, Dana. We've been joined in the studio by Tom Rogers, who's WIL News Director. And Tom's been working the story also since Tuesday. What's your take on all of this, Tom?
Well, it's kind of hard to find some time to breathe and look back a little bit, but I think it's, I mean, the phrase spur of the moment comes to mind. Everything is happening at the spur of the moment. This is an impromptu event, and all the concentration that we can muster and all the advanced planning we can muster only comes in so, you know, only does so good when something that, you know, a lot of people have described this as incomprehensible. And it's hard to plan ahead for something incomprehensible. I carried into the studio with me a guide that another public radio station put together on handling emergency coverage, different levels of emergencies, and it's very planned and thought out. And what we're going to do, what particular people are going to do, what their duties are, how often we break in, and I'm turning to the pages here, and there are very few things that apply even in, you know, in a situation like this. It's very tough to plan for, and just like in any business, there's probably a lot of room for error. I don't know if there are, you know, incredibly large errors, but I can understand where some of those, that have turned out to be errors, like the reports of the car bomb at the State Department and the like, can happen in the early minutes. All we can do is correct them as much as possible and make sure that the things that are coming in are verified and as credible as possible before we put them on the air. And we need to be in the business of assessment of rumors before anything gets mentioned.
I think we're going to be breaking away in a few minutes, and we'll be back in about 10 minutes. And when we come back, we'll be talking to some more people in the media who have been working the story, including Janie Gabbett of Reuters in North America and from Chicago, and Ken Schreiner, news director at WCIA here at TV in Champaign, and Paul Donahue, station manager of WICD TV and champagne. So we'll take a quick break. We're having some news and market update. Is that right? And then we'll be back in about 10 minutes.